Before Stax Records, when he was a very young man in Arkansas, Al Bell fell in love with music. As student council president at his high school, he was put in charge of school dances. He'd glean from fellow students, especially the girls, what songs clicked and why. He'd use that same approach when he was a DJ in Little Rock, then Memphis, then Washington, D.C. I asked him if he was able to select his own music to play on the radio during his years as a DJ.
Yes, I did. Underscore and all cap. I did, and I thought it was natural and normal, and it allowed me, frankly, to become the kind of successful disc jockey I was at that time.
Al Bell quit radio when disc jockeys began to have much less say in what records they were able to spin, but he took his knowledge of the business with him to Stax, where he was put in charge of promotion. I imagine that experience being on that end of the business helped you much when you were hired by Stax to be the director of promotions.
No question.
You understood.
I understood the music, and I understood what different jocks, disc jockeys around the country liked. I knew what a Georgia Woods in Philadelphia at that time, the kind of music that he liked. I knew what a Rodney Jones in Chicago liked and so forth and so on. So I knew of our releases, when I listened to some music, I knew what disc jockey to take it to that would start it for me because I knew that's what he liked.
So if you had a release from, I don't know, Rufus Thomas.
Right.
And you'd say, okay, I bet I can break this easier in Philadelphia because of that jock up there.
I knew that I could take that to Shelley, the Playboy Stewart at WYLD in New Orleans, Louisiana, and that Rufus Thomas would get burned up. He would go crazy over Rufus Thomas, and I'd tell everybody else in the country what he was doing and spread my Rufus Thomas as a result of that.
Now, when you say you took it, did you physically take it? Would you go to the radio stations?
Oh, yes. I'd go to the radio stations, spend time with the disc jockeys, and not only would I go to the stations, I became more or less like the living publication that had the information on the industry. Those black disc jockeys at that time did not have a publication that provided information on what was going on in their segment of the industry. Well, I was involved with everybody, so as I would go from station to station, I could tell them what was going on in different markets, tell them the promotional activities that a disc jockey was doing in a certain market, would tell them records that the disc jockeys were playing in other markets, and why the disc jockeys had told me they were playing those records, because I'm a disc jockey. I love music and playing music for people. So I would share with them all of that information so they would know what to do. And when I went to Stax, they had great music in the can that they hadn't released that they didn't think was great because they really didn't know. And my job was to turn the company around at that time because it was 90,000 in the hole and about to go under. Well, I was able to go to the music that they had been recorded already and was in the can and started listening to that music, and knowing what I knew about the listeners and the audience out there, I started selecting the releases and releasing that product and then telling the producers what they should be producing based on what I knew as it related to people.
What were a couple of those records that were in the can but hadn't been released yet?
One was, well, this one wasn't in the can. This one was being produced, called You Don't Know Like I Know by Sam and Dave. As a matter of fact, that was on Christmas Day. That was the first recording that I broke at Stax. It was being recorded at that time, and Jim Stewart was asking me in conversation, what do you think about it? You heard them working it up. I said, it's a hit record. I said, it's a hit record. It's a hit record and a hit song because, one, of the rhythm feel, and, two, what the lyrics meant to African Americans. Because it was, you don't know like I know what the Lord has done for me. So I knew how that would resonate, you know, in the marketplace. And I talked about that with Jim Stewart, and it influenced him so much until he said, well, I need to put, based on what you're saying, I need to put extra emphasis on the backbeat. Well, I didn't quite know what he was talking about at that time. And what he did was he went and put a tambourine on top of the snare drum and had the drummer to take the back end of the drumstick and hit that snare, which would then reverberate through the snare, hit the tambourine, which would reverberate through the snare, and that's how you have the sound that you have on Sam and Dave, You Don't Know Like I Know, which was their first hit record.
You don't know like I know.
And what I did was, at that time, I knew what happened at radio stations and all of that. I broke it on Christmas Day, because on Christmas Day, I knew that the part-time jocks were on at the station, and they were playing all of the Christmas music. So I got the records to these part-time disc jockeys during the week and told them, I'm giving you something that nobody else has, and you can play this on Christmas Day, and it's going to get you a lot of attention because nobody has it but you, and you instead of playing all of the Christmas music, play this. And they would play Jingle Bells, Silent Night, etc. You Don't Know Like I Know Sam and Dave. Another Christmas song, another Christmas song. You Don't Know Like I Know Sam and Dave. And December 26th, it was a broken record. The demand was in the marketplace.
Was that a great feeling when you'd break a record? I mean, when you started to see it go up the charge?
My God, that I don't even know how to explain that feeling. I don't know if great is the strong enough of a word. It is so satisfying, and then knowing what it does for the artist, I mean, just adds to it, because what drives me is wanting to get great music to build the artist's career. And then to see a piece of product happen like that in the marketplace and people start reacting is great. But and I love seeing people react positively to music. So when something breaks in the marketplace and the demand is there, that's my satisfaction. That's my reward. That's what I want. That satisfies me.
At Stax in the 60s and 70s, when that roster includes Otis Redding, Sam and Dave, Rufus Thomas, Isaac Hayes, all these folks, one of the maybe the second largest African-American owned business in the United States at the time.
Yes.
Those had to be heady days for those of you at Stax. You're on top of the world.
Well, you know, it's interesting. We never saw it like that. And only in retrospect do I have some appreciation for having the second largest African-American owned business in America. We were really busy about the business of doing what we were doing. Our goal was to make great music, to market that product in the marketplace, to work with our artists and get our artists where they were accepted by the general market and make sure they had great concerts, and that we continued to do that, that we were building the careers of the writers, building the careers of the producers. And that's what we talked about on a daily basis. We lived that. So we really weren't into, if you will, those other things. We paid attention to, from time to time, the charts to see what a record had done on the charts. But that really wasn't it. What we talked about was sales. You know, how many records did we sell? And it wasn't to count the money as much as that's letting us know how much it's appreciated. And that's what the conversations were about. I mean, when Black Enterprise magazine called me, I wouldn't give them any information. I said, I'm not interested in where we are, you know, who's the largest African-American-owned business in America. I'm not interested in that. Don't even include us in it. But somehow or another, they got whatever information they got, you know, and made the conclusion. The interesting thing is about 3 or 4 years ago, Barry Gordy and I were in Philadelphia. He was number one. And Barry said, you know, man, I got to tell you, they said I was the number one largest black-owned business in America based on revenue generated. He said, but I just figured this out. He said, I used to think you were crazy releasing all of those albums. And I was releasing these singles and up and down the charts. And said, why are they all releasing all these albums down there? He said, and I didn't realize until later on that you could turn around and sell 100,000 albums and generate more money on 100,000 albums than I was generating on my number one single. He said, so so you were generating more money than me. I said, you think so, Barry? He said, no, I know so.
Radio, it used to be, if you were in New Orleans,
right?
Radio sounded like New Orleans radio.
Yes,
you went to D.C., you knew where you were in D.C., Tulsa, Seattle, wherever.
Yes.
It sounded different. There were regional hits.
Yes.
There was personality.
Yes.
It's not like that anymore.
No.
And that's a shame.
It's horrible. Borderline criminal. But you see, what it did, you had then, as we changed things to the extent, as opposed to you not having under laws to have ownership of any more than two radio stations in the market, mm-hmm. Well, an AM and an FM ultimately. And I think this started under President Reagan, and it was accelerated under President Clinton. where it was possible to go in and, as a matter of fact, own every darn thing in the marketplace. And it,
from 2,000 miles away.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And but if you own, you know, 200-300 stations across the country, if you're going to control it from a management standpoint, then you can't afford to play in New Orleans what people want to hear in New Orleans, and in Chicago what people want to hear in Chicago. You have to have music that's being played in New Orleans, Chicago, and all over the place, and later for those people in the market, let's just play what's popular and what's on the charts, and we can control and manage that. And it takes too much time, and we have other exposure and risk by allowing people to select music in those markets. We just have to control it better than that. So it went out of the window. And as a result of that, you don't have these unique artists getting a breath of air and a break in exposure in these individual markets where they get attention on a regional level and it's picked up, or you have an opportunity to explore it nationally.
And you don't get the unique voices that are bringing you the DJs. I'm sure when you were a jock, you didn't sound like anybody else.
No. No, I didn't. I know I didn't. Made sure. Miss Bell, baby boy.
And there's albellpresents.com, right?
Yes. That's, I must tell you, the motivation for that is to take and put a radio station online. Presently, it's just me, where we are playing this different music. And the first channel, ultimately there'll be 10, but the first channel is Al Bell Presents American Soul Music. And then we'll have rock and jazz, et cetera, with other people doing that. And we are starting a parallel piece to that that's a companion. That's Al Bell Presents American Soul Music. That's a three-hour syndicated radio show that's done on terrestrial stations. Presently, we're on Memphis, Tennessee from 7 to 10 on Friday night. And the idea there is to influence those terrestrial radio stations, because I'm letting my personality show and I'm playing music that they're not playing, and the audience is responding and reacting. So hopefully they'll respond and react enough to cause management at the stations to say, wait a minute, we got to consider this kind of music that Al Bell is playing. We're making money with him. And maybe we should consider personality once again, and they'll find that it's to their benefit. But at the same time, I'll use it to promote the radio station online. And as a result of that, continue to expose more people to the music and influence more people, because I want to see our business get back to dealing with the artistry.
Al Bell, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.